And now,
the definition. Definition.
Yesterday, at the International Association of Chiefs of Police conference in Chicago, Donald Trump shows up and he gives a speech where he announces one of the most terrifying things he's announced since the day he said he was running for president. Here's what Donald Trump told that gathering of chiefs of police. In coming weeks, Attorney General Barr will announce a new crackdown on violent crime, which I think is so important, targeting gangs and drug traffickers in high crime cities and dangerous rural areas. Let's call it the Surge. The Surge. Much like George W. Bush's surge in Iraq, where he decided to send over thousands upon thousands more U.S. soldiers to kind of wrap things up in Iraq. And here we are a decade and a half later, still there because it didn't work. But Trump is totally sure that his surge here in the United States on our own streets, totally going to knock out all crime. He continues, this is the more frightening part. To help keep you safe, I've made $600 million worth of surplus military equipment available to local law enforcement. So what Donald Trump announced yesterday at this International Association of Chiefs of Police is that he is going to be turning the United States, with the help of Attorney General William Barr, into a giant militarized police state. It's the Surge, folks. That's what he calls it. And here's what we have to understand. Here's what Republicans in general have to understand, because Trump has repeated these talking points. We see their acolytes out there repeating these talking points. And here it is. They are somehow still living in a 1980s action movie where there's just crime and murder and drug dealers on every corner of every street here in the United States. The truth is that's not happening. Are there murders? Yes. Are there drug dealers? Yes. Are there gangs? Yes. Are they as organized and prevalent as they were back then in those 80s action movies? Nope. In fact, they're far more sophisticated today than they were back then. See, Republicans are living in a dramatized fantasy world where the only way to fight back against these people is to have a John McClane type out there fly down in a military helicopter, jump out of it with a couple of AK-47s, and mow down 400 gangbangers in a matter of seconds. Yeah, it makes for great Hollywood action movie. Unfortunately, that's not how things work in the real world, because that's all fake. But Trump wants to make it real. He wants to give our police departments these weapons of war. And think about that for a second, folks. These are weapons of war. And he's giving them to police officers to carry them on the street, to use them on the street. Does that mean we, the United States, are at war? And if so, doesn't that make us the occupied force? Because he's not giving us those weapons. He's giving those weapons to the police to keep us in order. We are being further oppressed by this government today because of it. Police officers, as we have seen very clearly over the last decade, have no problem using their smaller weapons to just end a human life, even when that human is perfectly complying with everything they tell them to do. So what are they going to do when they get these fancy new $600 million worth of weapons of war? That's a terrifying thought. And if Trump is to be believed, it's about to become a very terrifying reality for millions of American citizens. Thanks for watching, everybody. And don't forget, if you like what you see here, like, comment, share, and subscribe to our channel. And now you can also become a member of Ring of Fire and get exclusive early access to certain Ring of Fire videos all throughout the week. Just click on the little join button right below the video.
A storm is rising against the privileged minority of the earth.
This is why I say it's liberty or it's death. It's freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody.
This is an NBC News Hotline special report.
We're at a turning point in the history of this nation. We need to stand for freedom.
There's an escalating authoritarianism and even a creeping fascism. Freedom is precious. If we don't fight for it, you lose it.
This much is clear.
We must rebel.
This is our country. We have always lived in it. We were happy. Then you came. We have to protect ourselves. We have to save our country. We have to fight for what is ours.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It's your brother, Brian Mandeese. Welcome to the Class War Battlefield Podcast segment. Yeah, I haven't done any significant pieces on these police shootings, mainly because the police shootings aren't deducible from a class war battlefield standpoint. The police shootings typically have to deal with a caste concept. As I've often said to you, that there are two hierarchical structures in this country. The first one we know very well, it's class. The second one we don't speak of very often because this is America and, you know, the whole mythology that we go by here. The second one doesn't exist here, but it exists. And that's caste. The difference between class and caste is one moves, one does not. You can move out of your class. In fact, most of the mythology of America is built on the concept that you can move your class. You cannot move out of your caste, even though some people are trying desperately to do that. A great example of trying to move castes, there are two caste systems in this country, but even one of those caste systems is less important than the other one. I'll get to that in a second. There are two caste systems in this country. The first caste system is color, what they call race. That's a big one. That is the most important caste, C-A-S-T-E, system in this country. The second one is sex, gender, man, woman. A lot of people are trying to switch their castes at this moment when it comes to this caste. Men becoming women, women becoming men. However, that caste is not, that second caste, gender, is not as important as color. It is not. Any feminist who is listening, it is not. It is not. Not any bit. And anybody who has come to me and tried to make the argument that, well, we don't, we believe that women are in the same boat as non-white individuals, especially non-white black people, all I have to do now is point to Amber Geiger. That tells you and shows you which one is more important and which one isn't. As a person who I follow the internet often says, and I like this saying because it is very true, you do not get white supremacist men without white supremacist women. Therefore, white supremacist men have a stake in protecting white supremacist women who birth them. Pure and simple. One of those castes are more important than the other, and that is race. And that is race. It does not matter to me if you like it. It doesn't matter to me if you want to argue with me about feminism this, feminism that. Historically, point to me a white woman who has been to prison for raping a black male where they have then found out years later that she did not rape that black male. Point to me a white man who has been to prison for raping a black woman who then, years later, they have found out that he did not rape that black male. Statistically, there has to at least be one of those. But we can point to all kinds of deaths and sentences that black men have incurred because a white woman said, he raped me. He touched me the wrong way. One of those two castes are much more important than the other. And that's important to acknowledge. It does not matter to me if your sensitivities make it hard for you to see that. It's a fact. Black people live with this every day. We know this. When you are in even a professional system or a professional environment, you know it. You know where the power lies, and it isn't with you. If you do not have the backing of some good-hearted white person who is more powerful than you, then you aren't climbing. If you don't have sort of the power or the protection of one or two good-natured white people, your career is going nowhere. So we know where the power lies. We are not stupid. And any person who steps forward and tries to debunk this because they don't want to believe it does themselves more of a disservice than they do us. From a caste standpoint, I could talk about this all day. Because it's just another symptom of what is wrong with this society. But from a class standpoint, there's something more interesting that goes on here. And truthfully, and I mean this, this was not apparent because it wasn't true. In the other instances where black people were being gunned down, unarmed, by police officers. This one, it just so happens, this aspect just so happens to be a part of it. What is that aspect? That aspect is the need for mobile social services. This country does not have viable social services. In fact, we don't even really have viable social welfare, or excuse me, social workers anymore. We don't even have people whose job it is to look after these people or to check on people when there's a wellness call. Why are we calling police officers for something that is a humanitarian need? It's time that we dispel the myth of what policing actually is. This is not because I hate police officers. It's not because I hate policing. It's not because I hate, you know, people who are dressed in blue. I hate blue people. There's no such thing as a blue person, by the way. So blue lives can't matter. Police officers can matter, and police officers do matter. But what is policing? Because this is the question that nobody really wants to answer. With everything that's been going on over the last 5 years, nobody asks and answers this question because it gets into dangerous territory. You then are confronting a society over its choice over social work towards policing. Why did the society choose policing instead of social work? Forgiving, by the way, the idea that if you're sitting in a building and you're managing 50 cases a day, that you are doing real social work, please. Let's keep moving on. What policing is it is a civilized, it is a civilian military force. That's what policing is. It isn't because I hate police. It's because that's what it is. Policing is a civilian military force. You don't believe me. That's fine. I'm glad. Don't believe me. Do me a favor, though. Go online. This is very simple to do. Go online. I want you to pick a police union. Just into Google, police unions. Look at the, you know, whichever one you want to pick. Click on it. And I want you to go and find out who's the head of the union. And I want you to see what title they're wearing. open up another tab. I want you to type in military hierarchy titles. Then I want you to look through the hierarchy title and tell me if you see what title they are wearing in the military hierarchy. Then I want you to just do a little bit more research and dig. I want you to look. Your local policing station, your county police, your state police. I want you to look at their hierarchies. This isn't hard information to find out. It's all over the internet. You can get it. And then I want you to go back and look at the hierarchy of the military. And I want you to say to yourself, I want you to prove to yourself that I'm wrong. Look at the titles of those who are executing policing and look at the titles of those who execute military maneuvers, and you tell me how many of those titles for the military is throughout policing. There's a lot of them. I've done the research. I know this. Again, not because I hate police. It's time to just be, you know, it's time to be accurate and honest about what policing really is. Policing is a civilian military group. That's what it is. It is the military turned into a civilian organ. That's what it is. Now, does it mean that it's bad? Well, that's for you to decide. It's for you to decide. Their actions could be either bad or good. Their actions could be either bad or good. I suppose if you live in one of the areas where they're not killing you, then, you know, you'd probably say, we need them. We need more of them. They're great. They're awesome. Wonderful. But if you're living in an area where, say, you know, let's say the late 1980s, early 1990s, where they were literally using tanks to bust people's doors down, you might see them a little bit differently. You might be talking about them as an occupying force that has no great love for your people. Or maybe even if you're in an area like Ferguson, where, well, we've seen what they did out there, you might view them a little bit differently. The question of why policing is important, but even more so, why do police do the things they do? That's a more important question. Yes, yes, yes. I've heard from police officers who have, you know, posted videos online saying, you know, hey, look, we're not all bad, but we're not all good either. We do a lot of good things. And absolutely, because statistically, you're going to get some people who genuinely want to do the job and want to do it well and feel that notion of civic duty. But there's also a number of people who go into policing because they like the power trip that they have, and they actually execute the power against people in a negative way. Now, here's where the fun part comes in. Because I was having a discussion with a friend about all this, and he said, well, I just don't understand why, you know, you guys have to be so hard on policing when police do so much for us. He was a white man, obviously. And I said, well, maybe he does a lot for you. And I've had a couple of incidences where, you know, policing, it got on my nerves. And one time I got arrested for some stupid crap that seriously should have never been arrested for, where a person was cussing them out and didn't get arrested. But, you know, I tried to hold the peace and I got arrested. So it might be that people view them just a little bit differently. But I suppose ultimately what frustrates black people about policing, I said to them, is that there's really two reasons. First one is, y'all don't like to believe us. We keep telling you for a long time that things are happening, and you don't believe us until we start finally getting sick of it and start tossing some stuff around. And suddenly now, whoa, 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 these black people are acting all illogical and stuff, and why don't they just do stuff in a nonviolent manner? When you excuse the fact that we have been telling you for 10 years, 12 years, 15 years that this stuff is happening. But then even more so when we ask you, get these members of your police department out of our community because they've been doing so much damage, you don't believe us. So now we have to make an assumption. Because you keep telling us that there's a few bad apples. Well, okay, if there's a few bad apples, let's talk about this. If there's a few bad apples in a crate, what do they tell you? What's the old axiom, guys? Come on. One bad apple spoils the whole bunch, right? So you have a few bad apples in a crate. You take it out, you take those bad apples out the crate or else it's going to spoil the whole bunch. If you refuse to take those few bad apples out of the bunch, guess what we have to now assume? That the rest of the apples are also spoiled. Meaning, maybe you want those bad apples. Now we have to deal with that. We have to deal with the fact that now we might be dealing with a force in our community that's there for detrimental purposes. And they're there at the behest of the wider society. So now we got to deal with that. Well, the person said, that's just ridiculous. I mean, come on, seriously? Said, come on, seriously, nothing. Police officers have been known to assassinate leaders in our community. Police officers have been known to peddle drugs into our community. And by the way, these are not things that are conspiracy theories that I can't complain, that I can't explain or prove or, you know, these aren't those. This is stuff that actually happened. We know this. We know Fred Hampton was killed by the police department. We know that. That's not even a question. People talk about his death and fail to mention that it was law enforcement. Which I love that phrase, law enforcement. Okay, what law are they enforcing? What law are they enforcing? It was law enforcement which killed him. Which killed him, set him up and killed him. We know that law enforcement was on the scene during Malcolm X's death. We also know that they were on the scene when Martin Luther King was killed. We know that law enforcement played a pivotal role in the 1980s when the MOVE bombing happened. They played a pivotal role. It was military-like precision when they bombed those people into death. We know that. We also know that law enforcement played a pivotal role in trafficking drugs and protecting drug lanes into the black community during the Contra affair and afterwards. We know that. That's not conspiracy, ladies and gentlemen. That's fact. In fact, it is so fact, it is conspiracy. It's just not theory. It's fact. We know this. So, who are the cops there to protect? That's what I ask. And my friend, obviously, says, well, that's just, I mean, come on, man. You know, he had no answer, in other words. And then when you combine that with the fact that we found out that Ferguson was being milked by the police department in order to support the white municipalities around it, something that black communities have assumed was happening for years, you have no leg to stand on. You have no argument that you can call on. To that last part, to Ferguson, because this is important. Why do police do what they do? And this one, I actually have some sympathy for police officers, because this is not what policing should be made to do. This is not what policing should be for. We know, because police officers have said, that they have quotas, a lot of them, that they have to write so many tickets. Why? Because they got to get those citations up so that the municipality can draw in money. Now, this is tribute, ladies and gentlemen. Remember I said this is a civilian military organization. This is tribute. Police departments have to now act as royal tributaries, where they go out and they get gold for the king. That's part of their role. They have to bring in money for the budget of the municipalities. Now, the majority of the municipalities that enjoy this money that they're bringing in are white. And that's important because black communities ain't seeing the money. We're looking around and we're seeing stuff that haven't been fixed in years. We're not seeing the money then. It's going out of our community. Policing should not be that, but it is that. Why is it that? It's that because, and this is where the class analysis really comes into focus. Why is it that? Because guess what? Rich people don't want to pay their taxes to enable taxes on the non-wealthy to be lower. And we are still having that argument about taxation. We're still having that argument. We are still having that argument. Policing is not the type of organization that you want to fix the social ills in your society. You do not want policing to do that. Why? Because policing sees everything as a threat. It is a military arm. All the military knows how to do is fight and kill. It builds structures that enables it to fight and kill. You do not want the military, you do not want policing to deal with matters of health. You don't want it. And so therefore, you are putting police officers who are trained to be civilian soldiers into a position which they are not mentally prepared for, which is to be kind, to be nurturing. None of that. No, what needs to happen in this society is you need to have a civilian corps, a social workers civilian corps, just like they have in France, just like they have in, if I'm not mistaken, Sweden and Norway. Might even have it in the United Kingdom. You need a civilian corps of social workers where those are the people who you dispatch when you have such a call as that which was made for Miss Tay Jefferson. You don't need a guy showing up with a gun. You need a man or woman who is ready to make a healthcare call, to show up, and to talk to the neighbors, and to know the neighbors, and to, I mean, this is what you need. You need social workers. The problem is, the wealthy only knows one thing when it comes to a society. And the few with the genius to actually think outside of the box, they suppress. The wealthy only knows because, you know, this has been what they've done for the last 1,500 years to the last 2,500 years. They only know the military. They only know soldiers. They know knights. They know how to cow a population who they think of as dangerous to them. They don't know how to actually build a society. And the few that do, again, they don't listen to them. Because the majority of these people at the upper echelons, all they care about is control. When I listened to the book Dark Money, what I found interesting is how that concept of control came up during the childhood years of people like the Koch brothers and Richard Mellon Skaith, and how that notion of control, which contorted their psyches and their emotionalities, was played out throughout their lives and everything that they did. And thus, it didn't surprise me. It didn't surprise me. Kind of saddened me to an extent when I discovered that these people were so enamored with control that they were willing to build structures that decimated the family, the family fabric, decimated it, decimated the public consciousness of its own not only will, but its own welfare. They were willing to build structures which decimated those things which we think of as spiritual, in order to stranglehold or to wrestle control of the society away from the broader public, and to place their hands over the necks of every man, woman, and child in this country. These people, really sparring from Gabramate here, they have psychological problems. And because of their psychological problems, they don't see the world right. So policing is a great answer to everything. Hell, it's worked for the last 2,500 years, even though it hasn't. And it's been the overreaching of that type of authority which has always led to revolution, which has always led people to destroy everything to get from underneath that type of oppression. These people do not know any better. And it's costing us. It is not because I hate police officers that I believe they should not be doing this type of work. It is because their mandates in this society, which really started coming into existence during the Industrial Revolution in this country, because of that mandate which really pushed them to be aggressive towards strikers, to be aggressive towards unionists, to be absolutely barbaric against anybody speaking out against the prerogatives of the wealthy and the industrialists. And when I say barbarous, I mean barbarous. These people would kill families to stop unions from organizing. They would kill families. Because of that mandate, you cannot be a healthful entity in a society like this. You can't be. Your mandate, your seed, is too buried in the concept of protecting the rich and injuring the non-rich. So, what you would need in such a society is a social worker core to sew together the fabric of the society which industrial capitalism is ripping apart. And this is something that was seen by the general population over 120 years ago. It was led, however, and most interestingly, by the church. The social worker movement, which was decimated in the 1950s, ladies and gentlemen, the social workers movement came out of the church's recognition that capitalism was tearing apart people's lives so much and not providing those people with the means of healing themselves, particularly when it came to families. They realized this, and they said, we got to do something about this. We got to mend this. And that's where the social worker concept came from. It was also from this concept that people picked up the notion that, well, if capitalism's doing this much damage to the social aspect of life, to say nothing to the natural, there was many social workers who talked about its cost in the natural world. But if it's doing that much damage to the social life, then maybe we don't need it because it is not natural. Maybe we don't need it because it is not natural. And policing units, then most of the time militias, would infiltrate these groups and try to dishevel them, break them up, burn down their places of gathering, destroy what they were doing. Because these people weren't breaking laws, They were opposing wealthy people. And that is the beginning of policing. That's the beginning of policing. It's not because I hate police officers. It is because this is historically a fact. We had social welfare, social workers doing fantastic work in this country. Work that police departments couldn't even fathom doing because that's not what they were there for. They were doing that work of caring for the poor well into the 50s. And then during McCarthyism, McCarthy said these people were all communists. Some of them were communists, some of them were socialists, some of them were anarchists, but all of them were social workers. And they tore these people up and tore them down and tossed them out of society and said, we don't need you. And it's almost amazing. It's almost amazing. Because they tossed these people out and out of society at the same time or around the same time that the CIA started doing these wonderful mind control experiments. These wonderful mind control experiments. Maybe there's no connection. Maybe. But they tossed all these social workers out of jobs. Made them hide their desire to do good things for the society at large. And they started replacing them with policing. Throughout the 60s, more police. The 70s, the 80s. Police were called to do what these people had been doing. They forced the church, including the Catholic Church, for it appears to be the betterment of the society, to retract itself. And policing was placed in the positions where these people had been. But the problems never got better. They got worse. And now here we are. We're looking at all this and saying, we have to do something. But again, we don't want to ask the tough questions. Why is policing? Why does it do what it does? We don't want to ask those questions. Well, we need to. What was before it? And what needs to now come a little bit after it, huh? We need social workers. Now, the sad part about this is people are going to say, well, we need social workers, so let's go to college and let's learn about social work. No. Don't do that. The best social workers were not those who went to school for it. In fact, when it became institutionalized like it's become now, that was the problem. The best social workers had a spiritual reason for doing the work that they were doing and had a spiritual vision, which is something that I may be able to help out with, hopefully, next year. Mobile ministry coming your way from a different perspective, but spiritual nonetheless. These people had a keen understanding, most often from Christianity, but there were others and with other religions. They had a keen understanding of what society had to be, and they said the only way that society is going to get to a point of great health is we are going to have to get it there. The police, the militias, were not capable of doing this work because they were too busy working for the people with money. And so they had to work under extreme pressure to do the things that society needed them to do, but they did it nonetheless. In fact, I am not totally convinced that the social worker movement of the late 1800s didn't inspire the Black Panthers. If you look at what the Black Panthers did and then you go and you research the social worker movement, they were very, very similar. Very similar. The police are not capable of doing that type of work. That's not what they're trained for. That's not what they're there for. No. That's why they're always jetting off, because it's a fire to them. It's like the firemen. You don't expect the firemen to overreach from what they are trained to do. Policing should be dispatched because of a certain set of skills. We need social work. We need social workers, excuse me. That's what we need. And that's going to be the only thing that quells the distrust of police officers. Only thing. You need social workers. Mobile social workers. You need to train probably about 600,000, 700,000 of them, maybe a million of them, to get out here and actually establish wellness footholds or wellness footprints in communities to go out and do the work that the community needs done. If we are not willing to do that, then ladies and gentlemen, the frustration that's boiling over in the black community and many black communities towards police officers is not going to get better. It's going to get worse. Thank you very much. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, I imagine you would. You can always reach out and contact me. I love hearing from you guys. So don't be shy. Okay? This is your brother, Brian Meredith, and I will see you on the other side, I guess. Maybe. I mean, this is a lot. I'll see you. Let me go ahead and end this here then. I'll end this, and I didn't expect it to be this long, but, you know, I really do thank you guys for your time. Sometimes I just feel like I'm ranting and raging, you know, and that it won't have that much of it won't make that much of a difference. But I remember something that my father used to always tell me. You don't work in groups of a million, you work in groups of one. You don't work in groups of a million, you work in groups of one. Every person counts. If you can light a flame, plant a seed in one person, it will radiate out and spread farther than you believe, than you can perceive. And, you know, just quickly, I think one of the things that feeds me when I do these type of episodes is something that I remember from my very, very early days of being an adult. And I want to let you know that the story I'm about to tell is a little graphic. Okay, I'm going to clean it up so, you know, the radio stations that do play it, they don't have to really bleep anything or what have you. But this is a story that was profoundly, profoundly effective in my life. When I was 19 years old, I lived with a group of people, small group of people, some of them high schoolers, some of them, by the way, my brother also at this place. That was a nice little apartment. It was first apartment, you know, and some of his friends and his girlfriend, and they had a new baby, and so we were all there. And when school started up, you know, everybody was going back and forth to school, and they would always come there after school and head upstairs into the attic to play games and what have you. And so one day, I'm in my room, you know, doing my thing, and somebody, a friend of mine, comes past and says, "Yo, there's somebody in the words putting out upstairs." And I just kind of, you know, waved him off. I was doing something with music and was like, I don't, you know, whatever. And so somebody else comes in and, yo, there's a girl putting out upstairs, man. You might want to go up. I'm like, no. So a couple of other people come down and tell me the same thing. I'm like, no. No, thank you, but no. That's horrible, guys. Come on, seriously. So a couple of days later, Actually, I'm sorry. The young lady, young woman, who they're referring to, comes downstairs, and she pokes her head in and says hi and everything. And she's a very, I remember succinctly, she's a very attractive woman. And she says hi, and I say hi, and she goes along and does whatever. And she comes back about a week later, and she knocks on my door and says, you know, can I come in and sit with you? I'm like, yeah, come on, sit with me. And she says, you know, I met you a couple, like 3 weeks ago. And I was like, yeah, I remember you. She goes, well, I was wondering, and just, I feel like this is important, so I'm going to tell you. She was a white girl, probably about 17 years old, brunette. I am not white, if you couldn't tell, and I am a dark-skinned brother. So, she says, you know, I met you about 3 weeks ago, blah, 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 and then she asked me a question that has stuck in my mind. This happened nearly 20 years ago, and it still sticks in my mind. She says, I was upstairs, I was on my back, and, you know, every guy in the area was just taking their turn. And she goes, why didn't you? And I kind of looked at her. I was surprised that she would even ask me that. And I go, I didn't, because you're worth more than that. And we sat there and we talked a little bit. And a lot of what I said to her, I've lost because, you know, it's been 20 years. And, you know, it was obvious that this young lady needed a discussion about, you know, self-confidence, self-esteem, and growing herself up. And I left her with some departing words. This was the autumn of 2001. I didn't see her again that school year. We ended up moving the following year. Things, you know, life moved on. Well, in 2004, I was working a job where, you know, I was working a lot of days. And the guy who I was riding in with, we stopped off at a local store, now closed, because a lot of things out there are closed. And from across the store, I heard somebody yell my name. Obviously, you know, it was her. She came running up to me, hugged me. Hugged me in this massive hug. And said, oh my God, I have hoped that I would see you. You know, you changed my life that night. You changed my life that night. And I said, did I? And she goes, do you remember me? And I said, yeah, you were the young lady that was brought up there, and you had asked me the question of why didn't I basically come up there and have sex with you when you were giving out sex. And she said, yes, we talked for like 30 minutes, and you told me some really important things about myself, and I realized that I had to change, and I wanted to change. I need to thank you for that, because if it wasn't for you, I was doing things that was probably going to land me in a very bad place. I have kept that story with me my whole life. Well, you know, since then. Because to me, I was just talking to another person who was obviously doing something that I viewed as not healthy. But to have her come back and tell me that I contributed to saving her life. Ladies and gentlemen, this is less about me and more about you. When I talk about the social worker concept, most of us have a bigger picture in mind. But it really is truthfully about every person. It is one person. One person. I don't know what she's doing. She could have absolutely fallen back into, you know, bad negative behaviors. But it doesn't matter. At that moment in time, she was where she needed to be. And that's what you, I think, everybody who listens to this, that's what you need to be concentrating on. We can do very powerful and big things if we take it one person at a time. Martin Luther King used to talk about this. It's one person. It's not 50,000. It's one. He came from a very small church where cultivating human relationships was very important. That's what we need to get back to. It's so easy to talk about stuff when it's with a big audience. But we now need to be looking at each person, because that's the way that we're going to really heal this country, is with each person. All right, I'm now done, guys. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, reach out to me. Let me know. Again, I'm sorry about that story. It was graphic, but it was true also. It was true. And to think about the transformation that has to be gone through to go from believing you're nothing but that to going, she was about to go to college. She told me, she goes, you know, you made a mention of me going to college. I'm starting finally. Boom. It was powerful. Contact me, all right? I'll see you on the next one. Peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone, and they're alive.